from land motoring to ocean motoring. Australian-born writer Ben Carlin and his American wife Eleanor reach Melbourne in their amphibious jeep, which they call Half Safe. They should know because they brought her across the Atlantic and halfway round the world. Unlike most ships, she's just as much at home on dry land. The Carlins look cheerful enough, though Eleanor says she's a terrible sailor and is always glad when the wheels touch down. With false starts and delays, including imprisonment in Gibraltar, the trip's taken 7 years. The first seven are always the worst, even in a half ship, half jeep that's called Half Safe.
Great newsreel clip. So that is that he is hailed as the last great Australian adventurer, and many thought him a fool. His vehicle was described as too heavy for land and too small for sea, yet he took off in an attempted global circumnavigation in this ungainly amphibious army surplus called Half Safe. An American author has now chronicled the life and the times of Ben Carlin, and Graham Kemlow speaks to writer Gordon Bass about the incredible but true story that he has penned.
I'm fascinated, firstly, I'm fascinated by this book, and there's a great photo on the cover of the amphibious jeep that Ben Carlin drove around the world, and it's actually going through the middle of, around the outside of the Arc de Triomphe in France, in Paris. Great photo. How did you find that?
That is, I was really lucky. You know, as a writer, you're just hoping that you're going to find great resources. Ben Carlin went to Guildford Grammar School in Perth, Australia.
Yeah.
And before he died, he willed them all of his, most of his records. So they have a great archive of photos and other documents related. This picture actually came from his daughter, Deirdre, who also has a lot of stuff. And it's just it's a fantastic photo. You look at it, and it's not the vehicle on the cover, for those who haven't seen the book, is a sort of a half boat, half jeep. Doesn't look like anything that anybody had seen, certainly not in 1955 when it was taken.
It'd be an army vehicle originally, would it?
Yeah, so you're familiar with the army jeep, the World War II army jeep. It's sort of got two seats in the front, a bench in the back, four knobby tires, and not much else. During World War II, the American Army decided to create an amphibious version of the jeep, one that could go on land and water. So essentially, they took that little army jeep that we're all familiar with, and they wrapped a boat shell around it. And that was sort of the extent of it. And a soldier who was driving across the battlefield would come to a bridge that had been blown out. He could shift a lever and just putt-putt across the body of water propelled by a propeller. It turned out that this amphibious version of the jeep didn't really work very well,
right.
So very few of them saw their way into the battlefield. It tended to sink, quite frankly.
And yet, Ben Carlin, the subject of your book, has driven and swum, I suppose, this jeep virtually around the world.
Yeah, Ben served in the Indian Army during World War II, and at the end of the war, he was sort of at a loss for what to do with the rest of his life, and he was 35 years old. And he saw one of these amphibious army jeeps on the side of a runway in India, and decided that that was what he was going to do with his life. He was going to find one, he was going to modify it, and he was going to sail it around the world. And he thought it was going to take him about 6 months, and it ended up consuming the next decade of his life. I mean, this is a vehicle that was not made for a journey like this, certainly
no.
Not for crossing mountain ranges and oceans and
no,
things like that.
Made for a duck pond by the look of it.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
Even when it was tested on rivers in the States, it tended to, sort of get swamped over.
Wow.
and go under.
So where did he start? And just quickly, what was his
sure.
route?
So he began, he set out from New York in 1948, made a couple of failed attempts. The attempt that began the actual proper journey began in Halifax, Nova Scotia.
Right.
So he sailed from Halifax to the Azores. That was a 30-day crossing in this tiny little vehicle, sort of fueled by nicotine and coffee and nerves.
Right.
Sailed from the Azores to the west coast of Africa, up into Europe, stayed for a couple of years in England, rebuilding the jeep, and then just headed east across Europe, through the Middle East, through what's, Iraq and Iran and Pakistan, down into India, then through Southeast Asia, back up to Japan via Hong Kong, hopped across the North Pacific, landed in Alaska, and then did the final route overland. In the middle of storms, the worst storm was one that hit in the Atlantic where it was raging at 70 knots. And in fact, the storm was so bad that a Portuguese warship that had been sent to look for him was damaged by the storm. But the little Jeep just sort of bobbed on the waves like a cork. And so miraculously, it survived. Although Ben, for the rest of his life, you know, knew that he'd been incredibly lucky.
Yeah, it just seems, it looks terribly ungainly when you look at the cover of it on the road. I mean, one wonders how it ever got to survive in the water. I was just going to say to you that I noticed from your excellent map in the book that it looks like he goes from Calcutta down to Fremantle, Melbourne and Sydney, and then back into Asia. Is that right? He does a diversion?
That's correct. And thanks to Penguin for putting some nice maps in the book. In 1955, he arrived in Calcutta. A trip to Australia was never part of the original plan, but Ben wrote a book called Half Safe in 1955, which covered the first part of his journey. And his publisher thought it would be a good idea for him to go back to his home country of Australia to do some promotion. So he put the Jeep on the back of a cargo ship, had it shipped down to Australia, and spent a couple of months in Australia going from between the major cities to do book promotion.
And then in
early 1956, had the Jeep shipped back up to Calcutta, and from Calcutta began the proper trip again.
Fair enough. Half Safe, you mentioned, being the name of the vessel.
Yeah, and that was, he struggled with a name for this weird vehicle for a while, and then one day in New York, he heard this jingle for a deodorant. I think it was for Arid. Yeah. And the jingle went something like, don't be half safe, use Arid. Yeah. And Half Safe was the perfect name for this Jeep. It could have been called a quarter safe, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's a very Aussie sense of humor, I think.
Absolutely.
To do that, a little bit of an understatement. So how did you come upon the story? He's not related to you, is he?
He's not related to me. And that's a question that a lot of people ask. Why is an American writer writing a story about an Australian that most Australians haven't heard about?
Yeah, that's true. So
about 10 years ago, I mentioned that Ben wrote a book in 1955. And about 10 years ago, I found a copy of this book at my parents' house, and I pulled it off the shelf. And it had this interesting looking vehicle on the cover, sort of emerging from the water onto a beach. So I began reading it. And I was really surprised to find my grandfather's name mentioned in the first few pages.
Oh.
So it turned out that my grandfather and Ben had crossed paths in the 1940s when Ben was getting the Jeep ready for the around the world journey. My grandfather was a ham radio buff, and Ben had come to the States to begin the journey. So the two men got along. My grandfather helped Ben learn how to operate the Jeep's radio. And Ben ended up staying in touch with my family for the next 20 years. Oh. So writing the book, there was a personal connection to Ben, and I was fascinated to find out the role that he'd played in my own dad's career and the fact that he'd been in touch with my family for a long time.
Okay. And it's interesting because you mention in your prologue to the book, which is a really interesting way of starting this whole chapter, you mentioned that Norman Lindsay, the great Australian writer and artist, also followed Ben's voyage through the years with quite some keen interest. And he wrote to him from his home in the Blue Mountains, and he says, I'll just read it out. Australians, as far as collective action goes, Australians have done that splendidly in two world wars. But unless the individual can express the spirit that drives the mass, its moral value is more or less lost. I'm really not making any sort of overstatement when I say that I prize your half-safe voyage as I prize a fine poem or a picture produced by an Australian. Blood and spirit are inseparable. That's an interesting way that Norman Lindsay has of congratulating Ben on his arduous, some might say foolhardy, voyage.
Yeah, and it was really important for me to include that in the book because Ben really struggled to explain the point of his journey, especially when it went on year after year and the media began to lose interest. Ben never could explain what drove him. I mean, he wasn't doing it to raise awareness for a cause. He wasn't doing it to explore a new area. And so the media really struggled with what to make of what he was doing and spending 10 years going around the world in this amphibious Jeep. But there were a few people that understood it. Norman Lindsay was one of them and said that basically Ben was the personification of spirit. And I think that's the best, a great way to define him. I mean, Ben was just driven, and he would not stop until he had accomplished what he set out to do.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I reckon Aussies do sort of get some of this foolhardiness. Do you know whatever happened to the vessel at the end of time?
I do, and in fact, I've sat in it. Ben stayed in the States for several years after he completed the journey in 1958, and eventually came back to Australia in the 70s. He ended up willing the Jeep back to Guildford Grammar School outside of Perth, and it sits there today in a protective shelter. And if you visit the campus, you can see it looking pretty much the way it did when he emerged, when he finished the journey in 1958.
Gordon, I just want to say it's a great read, and people who see the amphibious vehicle on the cover and the Arc de Triomphe in the background will know that they've got the right book. A great Australian connection there. So well done, Gordon.
Thanks, Graham. It's been a pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, as you gather, that was author Gordon Bass speaking with Graham Kemlow, and what a great story.
It is a good story, isn't it? And that newsreel was a bit of a find.
Oh, I love that.
Mm.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.